This is Washington Watch with Tony Perkins, your daily voice in Washington, D.C. on the issues of faith, family, and freedom. And now, here's your host, Family Research Council President Tony Perkins.
And happy Tuesday. Welcome to Washington Watch. I'm Russ Jones, sitting in for Tony Perkins, who's president of the Family Research Council and regular host of this program. I'm the producer of Washington Watch and a 30-year media veteran. Well, up on today's show, breaking news, reports claiming North Korea is now capable of producing nuclear warheads small enough to fit on missiles. We'll talk with Congressman Ralph Abraham of Louisiana, who serves on the House Armed Services Committee, in just a moment. And while North Korea races ahead with its nuclear program, the State Department says under the Trump administration, we're making gains against the Islamic State. We'll talk with National Security Analyst Ryan Morrow. A Wisconsin judge is being punished for expressing her beliefs about marriage. Yes, that's right. We'll talk with Jim Campbell, senior counsel with Alliance Defending Freedom. He'll share with us about taking this case all the way to the Supreme Court. And how do people become poor? A new poll finds a majority of white evangelicals believe poverty is a result of individual failings. We'll talk with Bishop E.W. Jackson and field your calls towards the end of the program. Well, as I said, breaking news, a new report says North Korea now has miniaturized nuclear warhead that can fit inside a ballistic missile. A study by the Defense Intelligence Agency obtained by the Washington Post finds that the rogue nation now controls at least 60 nuclear weapons. Joining us now is Congressman Ralph Abraham. He represents the 5th Congressional District of Louisiana and also serves on the House Committee of Armed Services. Congressman Abraham, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Thank you so much. Know you're on recess and meeting with your constituents down there. And then today, this is the first high-level internal government study to acknowledge that North Korea now has this deadly technology, right?
Oh, for sure. And, you know, what I'm told is that a nuclear warhead capable of doing significant damage can be the size of a golf bag now. So they have got this down to an exact science, and you are exactly right. They can certainly strap this onto an ICBM and deliver it.
Well, earlier, U.S. Ambassador Nikki Haley to the U.N., she says that she is uncertain if sanctions against North Korea will work, but says the sanctions will force Kim Jong-un to rethink his endgame. Let's listen to what she had to say. So, you know, we're going to come up with that clip here in just a minute. And the study by the Defense Intelligence Agency finds that the rogue nation now controls, you know, as I said, 60 warhead nuclear weapons, and we're going to listen to this clip now. Let's listen to what Nikki Haley had to say.
It was something that we needed to do. What this is going to do is send a very strong message and a united message. It was a strong day for the United States. It was a strong day for the United Nations, because what you had was the entire international community tell Kim to stop. China stepped up and not only said they were going to vote for this, they announced that they were going to enforce, and they encouraged every other country to enforce. We tried to ask him, what's your end game? Now that we're doing this, what's your end game? And he has to decide, if he strikes the United States, is that something he can win?
Well, Congressman, I think a lot of folks are fairly pretty impressed with Nikki Haley. What say you?
Yeah, I am too. And the fact that she was able to get a unanimous decision on this resolution from the United Nations Security Council speaks volumes for her ability to do her job well. So hopefully we'll see what China does. This particular resolution, unlike the previous one, bans all coal exports from North Korea. Now, coal is their main export. I think 40% of their exports is coal, and 10% of their GDP is coal exports. Where, in my opinion, this resolution doesn't go far enough is on two situations. One, it only caps the slave labor that North Korea can send to China and Russia. It doesn't stop it. And it really does nothing as far as the oil imports that China can send into North Korea. Now, that's where you really need to put the screws on these sanctions, is to stop the oil going in. These sanctions, we're told, will maybe amount to $1 to $3 billion of hurt for North Korea, and that's great. But if you stop the oil, that shuts them down.
So let me ask you this. How do you negotiate with a guy who seems to think nuclear weapons is the only way for him to get what he wants in the world?
I go back to the Reagan era when he was facing somewhat of the same situation with other countries. And again, it's, you know, his famous line was, peace through strength. And certainly we've got to show a lot of strength to the North Korean and to the Chinese government. If we have ships off their shore, if they know that we have the THAAD missile system up and running and can intercept a medium-range ICBM, that speaks volumes of where we will go if we have to. And we certainly don't want to cross that line only as a last resort. But if North Korea knows that we are very serious and that we're just not spouting words here, that gets everybody's attention, but it especially gets China's attention. China, again, is the key here. They can stop this regime. Again, as crazy as that guy is over there, you can deal with crazy people with strength also, as far as a world power is concerned. This is where China needs to step up.
Yeah, and I was going to ask you, what role does China play in this? And my understanding that they were having some maneuvers with their own military the other day.
They are, and of course, the thing that they don't want to see is the terrible refugee problem they would have from North Korea if there were, some type of conflict or certainly an all-out war. Nobody wants that. The United States certainly doesn't want it. But again, we cannot be threatened on a daily basis where one of these threats may come to fruition and, launch a missile not only at us, where we probably can protect ourselves with an intercept, but then we have to worry about Australia, Japan, certainly South Korea, where we have 38,000 American troops in South Korea. So that's a very hot area of the world, and it needs to be cooled down very quickly.
Now, just a little while ago, President Trump said that the U.S. will respond, quote, with fire and fury like the world has never seen if North Korea continues to threaten a nuclear strike. And, of course, you can imagine how the folks on the left respond to that kind of talk.
Yeah. Well, I'm glad the president said that. We have a president now that does lead from the front lines and not from behind. And again, I think, and again, this is just an opinion of mine, that this message that he sent is going to bounce off Kim Jong-un's ears, but it was really meant for China, that if they don't start stepping up and actually enforcing these sanctions, whereas last time they didn't, they used third countries to get coal in and out of North Korea, then there's going to be a price to pay, and it's not going to be a very pleasant price.
Now, of course, Japan plays in this well. What's it mean for them?
Well, it means everything for them, because Japan is within a very close striking distance of a North Korean missile. That's probably where, even though he says the missiles are only aimed at the United States, I would conjecture that he's probably got one aimed at Japan also. So they've got a lot of skin in the game, and again, they've got to allow us, which they are now. I mean, they're good allies. To use their airspace, use their air bases, and to put some missiles on their soil, too, to intercept if we need to be.
There's been a lot of contention on the Hill in Washington, D.C., on Obamacare and health. And how are your friends, your colleagues across the aisle when it comes to North Korea and what we're doing with foreign policy?
Well, it depends on the day, actually, and I say that with tongue-in-cheek to a point, but also to not a point. It depends on where the ask is coming from. If it's coming from the Trump administration, they tend to be a little bit more resistant to the notion or the tenet that is being put out that day. If it comes from their own leadership, well, then, of course, they're all in. So, again, if we don't have a country, nothing else matters here. And, the issue is if North and the South Koreans go to war, or if anybody strikes a match over there, North Korea is going to pour literally billions of troops across that DMZ into South Korea. And within the first 2 to 3 days, you're going to have tens of thousands of casualties. And I go back, we have American troops there. I don't want them harmed whatsoever. We certainly don't want the South Korean people harmed whatsoever. So So it's a the president's got a lot on his plate, but I think he's handling it very well.
Now, Secretary of State Tillerson, he's over in Asia, and I'm sure you're getting some briefings and what he's pushing for.
Well, not really yet. I think I know what he's pushing for, and he's basically taking the torch over there and saying, look, you guys have got to stand behind these sanctions, and we have to present a united front because that's the only thing that is going to maybe move this crazy guy over there. So I'm sure that's the message he's carrying, but as far as a brief, we haven't got one yet. At least I haven't.
Now, Congressman, you're back in the district. Are you having town hall meetings? Are you meeting with constituents? Why don't you give us a little update about what you're working on there in Louisiana?
Well, I was in Crouch Springs, Louisiana yesterday, looking at some port commissions there. Then I was in Amite, Louisiana at a meeting with the Rotary and a lot of the town members. Then I went to St. Francisville and toured a new hospital. So it's been a busy, good day for me down here in the Florida parishes.
Yeah, what are you hearing from constituents? What are they saying?
Well, they're still concerned, as we all are, very much so, about this health care debacle. We've got to get this right. And on the House side, we want to do tax reform, but until we can remove that almost $1 trillion worth of taxes in Obamacare, then our tax bill on the House side won't be near as good as it could have been. And as you saw just last week, Idaho, of all places, say they're going to go up 81% on their health care. Anthem yesterday announced that they were getting out of Georgia and Nevada, and that just makes two more states where they have left. So, you know, in Louisiana, we've had 114% increase in the last 3 years. It's just untenable, and we cannot afford to go where we're going. We've got to figure this out.
So are you seeing that folks have insurance, but they can't afford to use it?
Well, exactly. I mean, if you're paying $800 a month just for a premium and your deductible is $6,000 to $8,000 before you even are able to use your insurance, well, you're self-insured for, you know, almost $15,000 to $20,000. So you can say people have insurance. Actually, they don't.
So how many more days do you have there when you go back?
Well, we go back the day after Labor Day. And again, as when we're back in district for this month, it's very busy, but it's a good time. We, you know, we touch a lot of people, hopefully, and listen to their concerns. And, you know, people have concerns just as North Korea is very fearful for all of us. We hear that talk. We understand that, you know, Putin's not playing fair in the Mediterranean Sea, and China's not playing fair in the South China Sea. Iran is just chomping at the bits to get one of the nuclear warheads from North Korea and see what it can do with it. So a lot of moving parts, and unfortunately on the global front, they're not moving in the right direction.
Well, Congressman Abraham, thank you so much. One of our favorites here on Washington Watch, one of the strong conservatives on the Hill. We appreciate your service.
Thank you so much. Y'all have a great day.
All right, you too. Well, coming up next, new reports find the U.S. is putting the squeeze on the Islamic State under President Trump's administration. Well, have you heard any of that good news coming out of the mainstream media? It's crickets, silence from the mainstream media. National security analyst Ryan Morrow will be here when we return.
Hello, everyone. I'm Tim Wildman, president of American Family Association and American Family Radio. One of the places we visit on one of the days on our tour of Israel is the Shepherd's Fields. Now, this is a place in Bethlehem. You can look out on any given day and see shepherds with their sheep, as if it were 2,000 years ago during the birth of Christ. So that's a very special place that we visit. Yeah, the terrain would be the same. You can just picture yourself being there the night the angels sang about the glory of the coming of the Lord. That's just one of the places we visit on one of the days. So if you would like to join us on our March 8th through the 16th tour of Israel, we'd love to have you. Just go to the website, twholyland.com, for more information. twholyland.com. Or for a free brochure sent to you in the mail, call us at 800-FAMILIES. That's 1-800-FAMILIES, F-A-M-I-L-I-E-S, option 5.
Who says you can't have your cake and eat it too? If you're like a lot of people, you would like to support the culture-changing efforts of the American Family Association. But there's the very pressing reality that your income must meet your current needs as well as act as seed for future income, either for the short term or for life. A charitable gift annuity might be your answer. A charitable gift annuity offers a unique method for both planning ahead for permanent income and supporting the work of the American Family Association. An AFA Foundation representative will walk you through the details of creating a charitable gift annuity, allowing you to decide if a charitable gift annuity is right for your individual financial situation. Connect with us today by calling 800-326-4543, extension 345, or visit us online at afafoundation.net.
If we want to take our nation back for God, I believe that we're going to do it through the young people that are rising up in these last days.
Tim Todd of Revival Fires International for Truth for Youth Bible Week.
They're literally going on the school campuses with a copy of the truth of God's Word and giving it to their friends in school that are not saved. And we're seeing a massive amount of young people give their heart to the Lord as a direct result of this.
Parents, order a free Truth for Youth Bible for your teen to pass along to a friend. Or teens, you can order a Bible for a friend. Visit RevivalFires.com or call 800-733-4737 between 8 and 4:30 Central Time. That's 800-733-4737.
My life is changed forever.
The Truth for Youth Bible inspired me and led me to Christ.
It's Truth for Youth Bible Week. Let's take the message of the gospel to America's youth.
Thank you so much for the Truth for Youth Bible.
Well, welcome back to Washington Watch. I'm Russ Jones, filling in for Tony Perkins. And if you want to catch these shows, you know, we archive them on the FRC website, frc.org. You can go take a look there and go back. And lots of great content here day in and day out. We bring on great guests who are authorities in their field, like right now. We're going to bring on Ryan Morrow. Some in the mainstream media have reluctantly admitted, keyword here is reluctantly admitted, recently that under the Trump administration, gains against the Islamic State has dramatically accelerated. Well, with us now is Ryan Morrow. He's Clarion Project's Shillman Fellow and National Security Analyst, professor at Liberty University. Ryan, welcome to Washington Watch.
I think you might have the wrong guest. This is Bishop E.W. Jackson. So sorry to disappoint you.
Oh, is that right? Well, EW, we are going to have you on at 42 minutes here in just a little bit, and talk about a very different subject, and we're going to talk about Christians more than twice as likely to blame a person's poverty on their lack of effort. Can you come back on with us at 5:42?
Absolutely. Yes, I'll see you then.
All right, thank you so much. Yeah, we're trying to get a hold of Ryan Morrow, which is according to the senior State Department official, about a third of the territory captured from the Islamic State in Iraq and Syria since 2014 has been taken in the past 6 months. But if you depended on the mainstream media, you'd never know about it, and it's one of those things that. What we've seen here, and I monitor the media all the time, and it can be disheartening to see the media not report on the good things that are going on under the Trump administration. And we hear time and time again about Russia and all kinds of other things, but we don't hear about the economy growing. We don't hear about the jobs that are coming into our communities all across the nation. And we certainly don't hear about the things that are going on with the foreign policy that President Trump is working very, very hard to push forward. And one of those things is the Islamic State. And with us right now is Ryan Morrow, Clarion Project's Shillman Fellow and National Security Analyst. Ryan, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Hey, thanks so much for having me.
Well, Ryan, according to a senior State Department official, about a third of territory captured by the Islamic State in Iraq and Syria since 2014 has been taken in the past 6 months. But you sure don't hear about it in the mainstream media. What can you tell us?
Well, the overall rule is that good news is no news. You know, if it bleeds, it leads. So you're not going to get much coverage of things like this. But it's very important news. Because what it shows is that the ISIS caliphate is collapsing right now. Their capital of Raqqa is about half taken away from them, and they are moving their forces towards the Iraqi-Syrian border, and that'll be kind of like their last stand. So things are going very positively, the fight there, better than expected. But I'm not sure that what is coming around the corner is going to be any better. There'll be a lull, and then there will be one, two, maybe three conflicts that erupt in Iraq and Syria shortly following the defeat of ISIS.
So this is what happens when you kind of untie the hands of the military, isn't it?
This has more to do with the dynamics of the region and not having a tough, grand strategy against the terror masters like the Iranian regime, Assad, all these other actors. We are too group-centric in our approach. So we focus on beating ISIS, but then you have other jihadist groups that are rising up to take their place, and we don't get word of any real planning for that. So what I mean is that al-Qaeda is making a big comeback, particularly in Syria, where they have an army that some say is about 20,000 people. They've never had that before. So al-Qaeda is going to absorb the remnants of ISIS. There are other jihadist groups in Syria that are huge and are also going to ally with them. And then we're going to be dealing with that, as well as Iran and other adversaries. And it's going to become more complicated, and some of these enemies are probably going to be tougher than ISIS for us.
Well, Ryan, let me ask you this. Former Secretary of State Henry Kissinger, he said defeating ISIS could lead to Iranian radical empire. What are your thoughts on that? You know, you have a positive thing over here, but at the same time, you might be creating something different with Iran.
Right. That's already in the process of happening. That's because Iran has just basically invaded Syria. They turned Syria into a province, whereas Syria before was their best Arab ally. Now you actually have Iran controlling the Syrian military, controlling the ground there, and expanding that control, so that there's basically a highway going from Iran to Syria to potentially invade Israel and to reach the Mediterranean. This is what they've always wanted, to have this crescent of Iranian control, and now they've got it, and they're cementing it. And that's a big concern for Israel, especially, and a big concern for the United States, and you're going to see the ramifications for that in the next round of fighting that we're going to be dealing with.
But we're absolutely seeing a difference in approach to that region than we did with the Obama administration.
I'm trying to, you know what? It's still early. I'm not seeing too much of a change. The blowing up of ISIS and the increase in the drone strikes and things like that, that certainly has increased, and you've got to give credit to Trump for that. But right now, there's a big division within the Trump administration. There's a giant tug of war going on between those that want dramatic change and then the forces of the status quo in the form of Secretary of State Tillerson and National Security Advisor McMaster, and we don't know who's going to come out on top. So it remains to be seen.
Now, you traveled over there in the region. Tell us just a little bit about your observations there. We just got about a minute or so left.
Sure. Well, I think the most positive thing I came away with was the perception of American power and influence in the region. Even among those that may not like the United States, there's a real awe of America, and we have to value our power in terms of how people look to us, how the region thinks anything good or bad is due to us because we're that powerful and we're the land of dreams. That's something that we can use very positively. We can use that to influence the situation on the ground, to win people to our side, and I don't see it being effectively utilized. And the second biggest observation I had was really about the power of the Kurds.
Well, Ryan Morrow with the Clarion Project, thank you so much for being on Washington Watch. We'll have you back again. Well, a judge is under attack in Wisconsin because of her views of marriage between one man and one woman. Jim Campbell with the Alliance Defending Freedom is up next to discuss the case right here on Washington Watch.
Mm-hmm. making the most of your money. Here's Dan Celia.
Some good news. NFIB, that's the National Federation of Independent Businesses, their small business sentiment, which is a very important gauge as we think about the future of the economy. This isn't about the markets. It's about the economy. Sentiment among small business owners skyrocketed for the month of July. They're citing customer demand, and customer demand has improved greatly, and that's very, very good news. And all of this, in spite of all the junk that's going on or the lack of stuff that is going on in Washington, D.C., this closely watched sentiment gauge of NFIB rose 1.6 points to 105.2. Now, this snaps a 5-month either streak of downward movement or stagnation, and we still were well above 100. But this is very good news because expectations were for 103.2, and we got 105.2. So good news. Here are the three very key components of some of the things they survey. Capital expenditure plans, 28% say they plan on spending money on capital expenditures. 35% indicated that they have job openings, and 37% of those surveyed expected better business conditions. Those three things alone are very good news as we think about the future of the American economy.
Want to hear more financial advice from Dan Celia? Then look for his podcast when you visit the website afr.net.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. I'm Russ Jones, sitting in for Tony Perkins. It's a pleasure to be with you. Well, a Wyoming judge whom the Wyoming Supreme Court punished for her religious beliefs about marriage asked the U.S. Supreme Court on Friday to take up her case. Now, in Wyoming, magistrates may decline wedding requests for nearly any secular reason, but the court punished Judge Ruth Neely for saying that she would need to refer some marriage requests for religious reason. Now, with us now is Jim Campbell. He serves as senior counsel with the Alliance Defending Freedom. Jim, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Thank you for having me.
Well, set the stage here. Tell us where you've been and where you're at and where you're headed here.
Sure. Well, this case started in 2014, Judge Neely was called by a reporter who suspected that she held conservative Christian views and beliefs and thought that because of that she might not be willing to marry a same-sex couple. And so the reporter called her up and said, "Aren't you excited to be able to marry same-sex couples?" And her response was an honest no. And when he followed up and said, "Well, why not?" she explained it was because of her religious beliefs about marriage and the fact that she believes marriage is the union of a man and a woman. So the reporter publishes a story. That story is noticed by somebody at the Judicial Ethics Commission in Wyoming, and they bring charges against her. And then we can fast forward all the way to just last week when we filed a request with the U.S. Supreme Court for the court to make it clear that the state can't punish Judge Neely simply for saying that if she were ever asked to do a same-sex marriage, she would need to refer that to another magistrate.
So that all started with kind of a gotcha question, sounds like, and now it's gone all the way, and she has served as a municipal judge there in Wyoming for, what, some 22 years, and in that capacity, she has no authority to solemnize marriages. Is that right?
That's right. One thing that's interesting about Judge Neely's case is she, at the time the case started, held two judicial positions. The first was, as you mentioned, she was the municipal judge in her small town in Wyoming for over 20 years. And but in that position, she had no authority to do marriages. In this other position, where she was a part-time circuit court magistrate, she had discretion to do marriages, but she also had discretion to decline to do them for nearly any secular reason. So unfortunately, the commission tried to remove her from both positions, But fortunately, we were able to convince the Wyoming Supreme Court that they should allow her to remain in her municipal judge position. The only thing that's at issue still in the case is whether or not she can remain a magistrate.
And you know, Jim, I think a lot of people wonder, how can someone be punished simply for expressing a particular belief about marriage? And this question may be causing a lot of folks to choose not to go into catering, not to, to design cakes, not to be a wedding planner. Help us out with that.
Well, that's why this case is so important, because at the heart of it is the question of whether we're going to exclude from public life people who simply state their belief about marriage, and that belief being that it's the union of a man and a woman. The Constitution guarantees, specifically in the First Amendment, all of us the right to live consistent with our convictions. And the state can't single us out and punish us, treat us differently because of those views. And so in this case, particularly where the state allows all the other judges, particularly the part-time circuit court magistrates, to decline marriages for nearly any secular reason. The evidence in the case shows that a judge can decline to do a marriage just because they don't feel like it, because they prefer to watch a football game, or because someone's a stranger and they only want to do marriages for friends and family. In light of all that discretion that the state of Wyoming gives to their magistrates, there's just no good reason why they can't allow Judge Neely, if she were ever asked to do a wedding that conflicted with her faith, to politely refer that person to another magistrate.
So this particular case is both unconstitutional because it targets religion, and it's also raises issues of free speech, right?
That's right. So we have two aspects of the First Amendment involved in this case, as you talked about. We have the free exercise of religion, but we also have freedom of speech. And so, again, we emphasized to the court in our petition we filed last week that all that Judge Neely did was say something. All she did was say, this is my belief about marriage, and because of that, if I were ever asked to do something, that is, perform a marriage in conflict with my faith, I would have to refer that to someone else. She didn't do anything. The court recognized that she didn't hurt anyone. Court also recognized that she didn't injure the public reputation of the judiciary. So we're left wondering, why in the world is she being punished, which is why we're pressing this case to the U.S. Supreme Court.
So you've petitioned the court, and now you're waiting.
Correct.
Yeah, and what time frame are we looking at?
The state has 30 days to file a brief in opposition to the petition that we filed, and then we have a short period of time, a few weeks, to then file a reply. And then at that point, assuming nobody asks for extensions along the way, it looks like early October, the court might consider whether to take it up.
All right. Well, Jim Campbell, Senior Counsel with Alliance Defending Freedom, thank you so much. We're thankful that you're there fighting these fights for us, and we appreciate your work.
Thank you.
All right, Jim. Well, coming up next, we'll have Bishop E.W. Jackson back on. Whose fault is it if you're poor? It's a good question. It's an article that's been recently featured in the Washington Post. And we're going to talk to E.W. Jackson. He's going to help us answer that question when we come back. We're going to want to take your calls at 866-372-7234. That's 866-372-7234. We'll be back on Washington Watch.
The Center for Medical Progress continues to release shocking videos that expose the lies and crimes of Planned Parenthood. David DeLeiden, the heroic undercover journalist behind the videos, was recently exonerated from the charges filed against him. Come to Values Voter Summit to hear from David DeLeiden in person as he discusses his journey and the courage it takes to stand up for the unborn. With a new pro-life administration in place, America's primed for change. Seize the moment by attending this year's Values Voter Summit. VVS will give you the tools to inform and mobilize your community to protect the unborn and defund Planned Parenthood. Also, take advantage of this incredible opportunity to network with like-minded individuals. Invited and confirmed speakers include President Donald Trump, Vice President Mike Pence, Michelle Bachmann, Secretary Ben Carson, Ambassador Nikki Haley, Senator Ted Cruz, Kellyanne Conway, Dana Loesch, Franklin Graham, Ollie North, and many more. Join us at Values Voter Summit on October 13th through 15th in Washington, D.C. Register now at valuesvotersummit.org or call 1-877-372-2808.
Have you been looking for a way to serve others? Are you able to serve in a ministry without being paid? You and Friendships might be the perfect match. Friendships is currently taking applications for volunteers providing aid to disaster victims, refugees, and the impoverished, both here at home and around the world. Get more information at friendships.org or by calling 337-433-5022.
Many in America seem to have forgotten that its foundation was built on God. In this 40th year celebration of the American Family Association, we invite you to help us remind America once again of the truth behind our national motto, In God We Trust. You can do your part and display your faith with an In God We Trust car decal from the AFA store. Order yours today with free shipping at afastore.net. That's afastore.net.
So, what would you do with an extra $500 a month in your budget? $500. This isn't hypothetical, by the way. This is something you may need to think about very soon if you decide to become a member of MediShare. MediShare is a way to pay for your health care, and typically it costs $500 less per month for a family versus other health care plans. So seriously, think about this. You could pay off loans, pay down a mortgage, save the money for retirement, donate to charity. That would be a big deal. But you know what? Here's the best thing. MediShare works. It has 250,000 members, and it's growing fast. With MediShare, not only do you save, you don't have to pay for things you don't believe in either, and that is a beautiful thing too. So here's how you can find out more, and you might actually wind up saving even more than $500 a month. So check into it. Here's the number. Call 855-PSALM-23. That's 855-PSALM-23, now available in Montana. 855-PSALM-23.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. I'm Russ Jones, sitting in for the Tony Perkins. And if you want to follow us on Twitter, you can follow Tony at T Perkins. That's at T Perkins on Twitter. I'm at Russ Jones 60, the number 60. And also, all of these great shows, this content can be found at frc.org. And any of our guests that we have on, you can go find their Twitter handles and their social media platforms and things like that. And you can also go there and download the audio files and listen as you have time to do so. But last week, the Washington Post ran a story about Christians and poverty. The article reports Christians, especially white evangelical Christians, are much more likely than non-Christians to view poverty as the result of individual failings. And, we hear a lot of messages and sermons on poverty, and I wanted to talk with Bishop E.W. Jackson about that. Bishop Jackson is the president of STAND, Staying True to America's National Destiny. He's a conservative, a bishop, a Marine Corps veteran, and Harvard Law School graduate. And while all of that sounds great, for E.W., he's got quite a story. It wasn't easy to get where he is today. Well, Bishop Jackson, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Thank you. It's great to be with you.
Before we talk about this topic, you know, we all have a story. Can you just briefly share your journey as a kid, where you came from, and how you overcome adversity and those sorts of things? I think that's always interesting to hear when we talk about these sorts of topics in particular.
Sure. I was born into a poor family. My mother and father were breaking up about the time I was born, and I spent the first 10 years of my life in foster care. Pretty much estranged from my mother, with occasional visits from my father. And look, I mean, it was a bad situation. It was the roughest neighborhood in the town I grew up in, and I was doing a lot of the things that would have led me to either jail or an early death. And I don't want to pretend to people that I came out of that all on my own. There was the grace of God involved, and there was also the guidance of a very, very wise and strong father who helped me. But I had to make some choices along the way, and had I not made those choices along the way, you can rest assured you wouldn't be talking to me right now.
Well, EW, I think we need to put poverty into context, especially, you know, poverty here in the U.S. is different than many parts of the world. You've traveled the world, I've traveled the world, and someone here in the U.S. has a much better chance of not living in poverty just because of the nature of who we are as a nation. Would you agree?
Oh, sure. When we say poverty here, we're not even comparing that to the poverty that people experience in India, Pakistan, Afghanistan, Asian countries. It, no matter where you are in the world, poverty there is a whole different reality. In the United States of America, to be impoverished simply means you don't have the resources to enjoy some of the luxuries that are available in our country. But most people, as we know, who live in poverty, who are poor, classed as poor in the United States, most of them use cell phones, have big screen TVs, drive cars, live in housing with air conditioning and heat. So our poverty here is a lot different from poverty around the world. There's no question about it. But what we're talking about is the ability to climb out of those limitations and to do things that you might not otherwise be able to do.
Well, this particular article, the poll said 46% of all Christians said that a lack of effort is generally to blame for a person's poverty, compared to 29% of all non-Christians. Now, 53% of these folks were white evangelical Protestants who blamed a lack of effort for their impoverished state. Now, Bishop, I think you would agree that this is one of those issues where liberal worldviews and theological worldviews really are different, aren't they?
Yeah, very. And I'm sure what people meant by that, obviously, is that effort has to do with whether you remain in poverty, not necessarily whether you are born into poverty. I mean, it's certainly not whether you were born into poverty and whether you grew up in poverty, but whether you remain in poverty or you remain a poor person has a lot more to do with effort. And you're right. I mean, liberals tend to see the world fatalistically, and they believe that everything that happens to us is a matter of societal pressures and realities, and that people can't break free of those. That is frankly contrary to the American dream and the reality of what's happened in America, because we have been the most upwardly mobile society in the history of the world. I mean, I'm proof positive of it, and millions of others are as well, whether they're black or white or Hispanic, who were born into poor circumstances but transcended those circumstances by getting an education or starting a business or establishing a profession or doing any number of things in order to climb out of the circumstances into which they were born.
Well, Bishop, I think it would be great if we could field some calls, and I'd like to hear from folks about maybe their journey out of poverty, their first job. What did they do? Give us a call at 866-372-7234, 866-372-7234. I remember it was a week after I turned 16, Bishop, and my mama came up to my bed, and she ripped off the sheets and the blankets off that bed, and she said, "You get your rear end out of that bed and get into that car, and I don't want to see the whites of your eyes until you have a job. You are not sitting around this house all summer and not working." And I got in that car. I drove all over Kansas City. That's my hometown. I looked for a job all day, and I was driving back home without a job on state line. Kansas City, Kansas was on the right. Kansas City, Missouri was on the left. And there on the left, just barely on the state line in Missouri, was this big fancy country club called the Carriage Club. And Bishop, I went in there, and it's about 4:30. I remember it like it was yesterday. And big bulky guy, looked like he played football, had a badge on his suit, said assistant maitre d', and I said, "Sir, I'd like to apply for a job. I'm looking for a job." He gave me an application, took me back to the grill where the golfers have lunch, and sat me down and said, "Fill that out, and I'll be back in about 10 minutes. Well, I filled it out. He came back, and he was looking over my application and said, "Well, it looks like you've done quite a bit for a 16-year-old. And then he got real quiet. And I was getting nervous. And I said, "Sir, I'll be honest with you. My mama kicked me out of bed about 8 hours ago, and she said she didn't want me to come home until I had a job. And I will work hard." And he looked at me, got a big smile on his face, and he said, "Can you start the day after tomorrow?" And I worked there all through high school and college.
Yeah. Well, look, and you know, Russ, that was once the American reality. That was once the values. That expresses what were once the values that we all held dear. Sadly, liberal ideology has promoted victimization among people. And our young people, here again, this transcends race now. Many of our young people, whether they're black or white or Hispanic or whatever their background, they feel that they're victims, that they have been subjected to injustice. I had two police officers talk to me about the fact that they now get recruits in their mid-20s who come in, and before they'll actually take the job, they want them to talk to their mother. And I'm thinking, what a different world we live in. Because here you are at 16, your mother's not going to find a job for you or going out to talk to your employer. She told you, go out and find a job and come back. Don't come back till you have one. We really do have to reclaim the sense of responsibility for our own lives if this country is going to have a future as great as its past.
Okay, let's go to Peggy in Ohio. Would you stay on with us and take a few questions?
Absolutely, glad to.
All right, Peggy, are you there?
Yes, I am.
Hi, Peggy. Let's hear. Do you have a story of coming out of poverty or first job?
Yes, sir, I do.
You might want to turn down your radio just a little bit.
It didn't happen to me whenever I was young, and I'm definitely not a man. So I understand what both of you are saying. But I was a sinner, saved by grace, at the age of 29. And up until that time, my refrigerator was always empty, and my cabinets were always empty. And I believe that God is the one that turned that around. Whenever I asked the Lord to forgive me and I repented of my sins, and he was faithful and just to forgive me. And I believe that God is not a respecter of persons or colors, because we all belong to him if we choose to belong.
Amen.
To him.
Bishop?
Yeah, look, I said the grace of God, the guidance of parents. You know, we can't do it on our own. I think the point is we don't need government to do it for us, and we don't need to allow ourselves to become victims who use the circumstances of our birth or our background or our race as an excuse to do nothing with our lives. And I think that's the sad reality. That's the sad thing that has happened for many in our country. They've been given excuses for doing nothing.
Give us a call, 866-372-7234, 866-372-7234. Tell us about your first job or coming out of poverty. Did the church help? Did the government help? Where did you find your support? We've got Alan in North Carolina. Alan, welcome to Washington Watch.
Thank you. I grew up in a really poor home. I can tell you, you know, talk about what it's like being hungry, and to this day, I love pinto beans and potted meat. like I said, I could really tell some stories about that. But early on, I kind of developed a little lawn mowing business, and you know, I had regular customers. And my father, he taught me to work hard and take pride in my job. He had a fourth grade education. But I did that, and then I worked hard, and then I studied, because I'm thinking I don't want to live the rest of my life this way. And I kind of saw an education as being a key out of poverty. Mm-hmm. And so when I was a senior in high school, there was one of the wealthy men in town who had had a financial endowment, and every year it would give out at least one scholarship. And then that year I was the first recipient of the scholarship. $500, and this is 1963, but it paid for me to go to junior college for 2 years. And I thought, after that, I don't care what I've got to do, I can get through the other 2 years of college. But really, that was it. And Pastor Jackson, I agree with what you say. It is so important for us to, I call it, not wallow in self-pity or wallow in the self-pity of the past. And in my life, I've learned I've learned from the wise decisions I've made, but I've learned even more from mistakes. But, you know, face up to it and accept it and then just do better next time. But no, government definitely is not the solution. And again, it was a scholarship provided by a wealthy businessman in town who had this endowment. And I'm thankful to him, thankful to the scholarship. And again, just it's hard work and taking responsibility for your own future.
All right. Thank you, Alan.
Hey, man, Russ, I said it this way. Don't wallow in what you think others have tried to do to you, but stand upon what you believe God wants to do with you. And if we will take responsibility and believe that God loves us and has a plan and a purpose for our lives, and then we'll set out, Faith Without Works is Dead, to do something with that, we can break the back of poverty in our lives. You know, Dr. Ben Carson got into trouble when he said poverty is a mindset.
Mm-hmm.
But it absolutely is, because if you are poor in your own mind, you will stay right there. But if in your own mind you see opportunity and you know you have potential and you're willing to work hard or study hard or do the things that you need to do, listen, prosperity will be yours. It may be harder for some than for others, but it will be yours.
And that's a scriptural point of view, isn't it, Bishop, about personal responsibility playing in our success and lack thereof?
Amen. The Bible says that the diligent shall grow fat. When the word fat there means shall grow prosperous or shall grow rich.
Mm-hmm.
And the Bible clearly teaches that. Look, there's that proverb that says, O sluggard, go to the ant, learn of her ways and get wisdom. And because the ant works during the summer and lays up for the winter.
Mm-hmm.
So there are a lot of scriptures about the importance of taking responsibility for our own lives. And the Bible also says, he that does not care for his own is worse than an infidel and has denied the faith. And so we have a responsibility to care for ourselves and our own. And it was you talk about the first job. It wasn't so much the first job, but it was when my father began to instill in me this attitude, there are no excuses in life. You either do it or you don't. You can't blame others. You have to make up your mind what you want to do, and then you've got to go out there and do it knowing that there will be hardship and pain and
mm-hmm.
failure and setbacks. But you've got to be determined, and if you are, nobody can stop you from succeeding.
All right. We've got time for one more quick call. Colleen in Virginia, you've got about 30 seconds.
Okay. I'm a nurse, and 20 years ago, I worked at a children's hospital, and I always asked the children, what do you want to be when you grow up? So I asked this little girl, about 8 years old, so what do you want to be when you grow up? She said, I'm not going to be anything. I said, what do you mean you're not going to be anything? I mean, you know, and I gave her some choices. I said, well, what are you going to do? She said, oh, I'm just going to sit back and collect checks like my mom does.
Mm.
I have often wondered what happened to that little girl.
Wow. Thank you for that. I'll let Bishop answer that as we wrap up the show here.
Well, it's tragic. I believe that the two worst things that can ever happen to human beings is to die without Christ or to die without having accomplished your potential and the destiny that God planned for you in life. And that's what happens when people see an example like that, rather than being told, you have potential, go out there and do it, and we will work with you and pray
yes.
with you and see you fulfill your dream.
Bishop E.W. Jackson, President of STAND, thank you so much. God bless you. Thank you for being with us. You've been listening to Washington Watch. I'm Russ Jones, sitting in for Tony Perkins. You can find us at frc.org. You can find Tony on Twitter at tperkins. That's T Perkins. You can find me at Russ Jones, the number 60. Thank you. Have a blessed night. It's been a privilege to be with you here today on Washington Watch. Stand strong.
Tony Perkins is a production of the Family Research Council in Washington, D.C. For more information on anything you heard today, or if you'd like to find out how you can support the ongoing efforts of the Family Research Council, visit TonyPerkins.com. Also, to leave a comment about Washington Watch, call our new watch line at 1-866-372-7234. That's 1-866-372-7234.